Welcome to Come and See, your podcast for finding truth in a world of chaos. Brought to you by Living Waters Abide Ministries. With host and founder, Richard Case, and co-host and retreat leader, Kathy Riccone. Jesus reminds us to watch for the signs of his return. Today, we will explore further what we are seeing in our times that line up with what signs he said would indicate the potential of the end and his return. We will also discuss the practical meaning of this as we watch and as a remnant prepare as he so leads. And now your host, Richard Case.
Well, good morning, everybody. This is End Times Friday, and we have our good friends Eric and Rabbi Ephraim and Denny talking about our Israel update, and we got lots going on since our last time we were together, and we want to, you know, process. We have a whole bunch for the next couple sessions, and so we will, you know, discuss that. And you know, one thing I know Eric's probably on the phone with his relative about this, but one thing Eric, you mentioned as we were talking about getting on, is that there's a firebombing in Clayton, Missouri. That's the place where Denny and Eric actually went to grade school together in high school. And then something happened here with a firebombing, and it happened to be involving a relative of yours. So tell us about what happened and what's going on with your nephew.
Okay, so just for interest of honesty, he's the son of my first cousin. But my family is very, very close, and so I treat him, and he calls me uncle, and I call him my nephew.
Yeah.
So he served as a lone soldier and got in what are called the paratroopers here in Israel. He served in a unit in a capacity called Machal, which is what that means is that he did not take Israeli citizenship, but served as a volunteer. I mean, at the founding of the state were Jews that came, and even some non-Jews who came from all over the world to assist Israel in the war that was persecuted by basically every Arab country in the Middle East, trying to annihilate the Jewish state when it got founded, and they became what was known as Machal volunteers. And so he was in this capacity, and he served both in Gaza and Lebanon. He likes to tell me the story that he spent Erev Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, in a bunker underground in Lebanon, a Hezbollah bunker.
By the way, if everybody remembers, we had a broadcast, and he actually visited Eric and shared with us, remember, what it was like for him to be there in Lebanon against in the tunnels against Hezbollah. So that he was in Israel, and now, you know, something happened to his home. So go ahead and start.
So he went back to the United States about a week and a half ago. He's currently studying for his LSATs. He's applying to law school soon, and at his home in Clayton, Missouri, which is it and University City are the most adjacent subdivisions, you will, outside of St. Louis City proper. Washington University kind of straddles both. So when Denny and I were in school, many of our co-students were often children of the faculty at Washington University. And so they live a very residential part of Clayton. And two nights ago, their home was firebombed. Someone threw Molotov cocktails, blowing up three cars in front of their house. Two of the cars belonged to my cousin, and one car belonged to a friend of one of his sons. And written on the sidewalk was a direct threat to my nephew, in my name. I won't mention his last name because the FBI is involved and wants to protect it. It's not my last name because we are connected through my mother's side, not my father's side. So don't have anybody going around St. Louis looking for Serkins. There are Serkins there, but they have nothing to do with this. And they said, you're a murderer and you will die. And then they said death to the IDF. And only in the articles you may see in the paper, broadcast or on the news, it only shows the portion of saying death to the IDF because the police and FBI insisted all the press hide his name. So they now have police protection for a while. And I'll probably see him in about a month. I'll probably be coming back. He'll spend probably the next year waiting to hear what schools he's going to get into for law school. Then he'll go back to the States and enter law school. So it's a bit of a scary event for everybody.
As something like that happens, it's real to them, obviously. And we see it in a variety of different ways. You know, Denny's going to have a follow-up question here, but how are they doing with that? What? How do they receive it? What do they do with it? How do they feel about it? And what do they do next?
Well, they're much calmer than I think they should be. My nephew seems quite confident. You know, he was obviously, because he was in the Army, he was trained how to handle guns. And he must have gotten a license in the United States because they have a gun in their home now. And I was just talking with this yesterday with a friend from New York telling me that something like 70% of the Jewish community now in New York is now licensed with a gun because of the situation there. So, and his mother is reacting like I would expect. She's a bit really panicked and really losing sleep. And his father, who's my first cousin, seems quite calm. I'm not sure he should be.
Will the FBI push it to try to find out who did it and prosecute him?
They collected video footage. My cousin had a very sophisticated surveillance camera. I think at least one, maybe two, and all the neighbors are contributing the footage from their cameras. And somehow the FBI seems quite, according to my cousin, quite convinced that they're going to nail this to the person because they have so much footage of what happened. So it depends on if this the perpetrator, you know, this is an area where you probably wouldn't walk to. You probably need to drive. The question is, did this person drive nearby and park the car? Or did this person park the car two or three blocks away and walk? And clearly, if they park nearby, they'll probably get the license plate. If they park far away, they may not. But, you know, the FBI, for some reason, the FBI seemed extremely confident.
If I can just drop something in here, I heard about this story. I didn't realize it was Eric's nephew. But the fact that you're saying he arrived in the United States a week and a half ago.
Yes.
And that people were already knowing, like people that hate Israel were, one like soldier who was of no senior rank whatsoever shows up at his house and they're already organizing fire bombings of his house is pretty scary. And I also want to like just jump onto that the atmosphere for Jews in the United States and Canada has completely radically changed in the last couple of years. I'm going to be going back to Canada to visit this summer, and I probably will not wear a kippah around on the streets. I certainly will not wear anything that identifies me with Israel. Actually, I might, but I'll be expecting, if I do, I will be expecting, not, you know, slight chance, I will be expecting to be confronted on the streets with people screaming, yelling, something or other. You know, for me, that's as shocking as you guys, you know, walking, as a Christian walking down the street. I felt so comfortable, so accepted, so Canadian American wearing a kippah was nothing. And now you know, going into a kosher restaurant, am I going to get attacked by a mob? These things are happening, you know, practically every day in different places. There was a statistic I just saw that 70-80% of the religious hate crimes in the United States are against Jews, and
only less than 2% of the population.
Yeah. And it's all what makes it particularly, and there is, it's all based on unbelievably contorted lies. And yeah. I guess we'll get into that into the thing, but the whole thing is based on genocide, which is not happening, apartheid, which never happened. And it's just the whole, you know, blood libel. It's just as ridiculous as Jews killed Christian babies for the Passover Seder, you know, to bake their matzah. It's just as ridiculous. But it's so caught on through academia, through protests. So the media is just repeating Hamas's messages over and over again, that it has just radically changed the atmosphere. It's not like it's coming. It has come.
Yeah, let's talk about, and then Denny's going to have a question. Let me ask this first, and then, because we want to talk about Gaza. A part of what you say is that the press here has stated, shown pictures that Israel is responsible for the torture and the suffering in Gaza. And so...
No, it's much worse. It's much worse than you say, Richard. And I did it as, you know, I have a Substack I post, and in it I showed articles and clear, almost incontrovertible evidence. The New York Times, which is used to be one of the most respected news outlets in the United States, whose motto is all the news fit to print, knowingly published on its lead story a photograph that its editorial staff knew was a lie. And they knew it before they published it. It wasn't like something, a mistake, when they apologized afterwards. They knew when they published the article, leading newspaper in the United States. It shows you just how much the media has declined. I mean, when I talk with my daughters, for example, they say there's no such thing as truth anymore. Yeah. There's no such thing as facts anymore. You know, whatever happened to Edward R. Murrow or Walter Cronkite? I mean, where are all these precepts of American democracy where facts and striving for the truth actually matters? It doesn't matter.
Eric maybe mentioned what the photograph was. And
it was of a little unfortunate baby boy. I don't know. It looked like he was maybe somewhere between 5 and 10 years old, with clear, his spine was exposed. His mother was holding him. And the lead article said, Gaza being starved to death. That's what the lead said. But this poor boy is suffering from cystic fibrosis or muscular dystrophy. I'm not sure which one. And the mother knew, of course, knew. The photographer knew. And the New York Times that published the article knew. And that photograph was, and along with like four others of similar types, of children in Gaza who were suffering from chronic illnesses unrelated to food, were being displayed across the media, in CNN, in MSNBC, in BBC, every newspaper you can imagine, Le Monde in France, all the Italian papers, they were all lying. And I mean, they weren't errata that they published afterwards. These newspapers are lying to their readers.
It was just a big article in a German newspaper that exposed
two newspapers.
Because they show, and the photographers, these, we have to remember, all the news that's coming out of Hamas is coming from supposed journalists who are all Hamas. They're, you know, that's the only people who are in there. So they're a Hamas operative working for AP or working for the New York Times or whoever. And they have pictures of the photographers lining people up in an imaginary situation and getting them all to like scream and pretend that they're begging for food. And the whole thing is just a setup. And of course, everyone around them sees this, knows what's going on. Israel knows what's going on. And the press knows that that's where the information is coming from. The picture that Eric was referring to, for example, when you zoom out of the exact same picture, you see there's another child in the family who's looking perfectly healthy right beside that. The mother's looking perfectly healthy. People are not starving.
No one questions this. And take issue with one thing Ephraim said. Not all these reporters in Gaza work for Hamas. They fall into three classes. Either they work for Hamas and are paid by Hamas, or they sympathize with Hamas and are paid elsewhere, and they'll publish whatever Hamas tells them. Or they're intimidated by Hamas that if they don't publish what Hamas allows them to publish, their families will suffer, potentially even being killed. And there are many documented pieces like this in the Free Press. One Israeli that I think I know for sure, my guess is Ephraim knows, Amati Friedman, who used to be a reporter for Associated Press here in Israel. He just gave a whole lecture on how this happens, that basically these so-called, they're not really reporters, they're called stringers. They're paid under contract by all the news services. There's not a Western reporter going into Gaza and reporting. These are all stringers, okay? And either paid by Hamas or they're paid by these news outlets, Reuters, AP, the French version, you know, the British version, whatever. And they cannot photograph what they want or what they think, even if they dislike Hamas. They cannot publish the truth because they will be threatened or killed.
On the other side of it, just what is the truth? What exactly is Israel doing, and how have they actually been the complete opposite of the lies?
So let me remind your listeners, had back in May, I think it was like May 20th, the deputy UN Secretary General, I think Thomas Fletcher, I may have his first name wrong, he's British, went on the UN and went on interviews all around the world, insisting that over 14,000 Gazan babies are going to die within 48 hours of starvation. This is what he said. And Denny, who I know reads my Substack, can point out to all your readers links to all this stuff in whatever notes you let your listeners follow. Needless to say, not only did 48 hours or a week later, not a single Gazan child, not one, died of starvation or malnutrition. Not one. And I guarantee your listeners, I guarantee them, that the same number will fall through now. All these lies of genocide, starvation, all this nonsense and lies being published in the Western media will prove totally false and negative. But not a single one of them will retract anything. And all they will leave is the image with their list. It's the fall of the West. I'm sorry. When truth no longer matters to the publishers of these leading newspapers, only lies matter. Why bother reading them anymore? No one is dying of starvation in Gaza. I'm sorry. It's not. Okay. They just announced 3 days ago that the price of, because they're flooding now Gaza with aid because of all this nonsense, the price of flour in Gaza has plummeted to basically, it's totally worthless. People are emptying sacks of flour on the street to use them for other purposes because the price is so low. Okay. Because the aid is just flooded in. So there's no starvation in Gaza. All this is nonsense. Okay.
Plus, at the time of the worst screaming a couple of weeks ago, there were literally hundreds and hundreds of gigantic trucks that were waiting to be delivered, and the UN was refusing to deliver it, and no one mentioned that part of the story. And they're also, the UN just recently admitted something that every Israeli knows, that 80% of the aid that goes in gets stolen by Hamas. And then they use it, then they sell it on the black market, and they use it to pay people's salaries and terrorists so that they can keep their army of terrorists alive and keep everyone on the payroll and blackmail everyone else in Gaza.
What kind of aid is Israel providing? I know they've been providing aid.
Israel is attempting to break Hamas's stranglehold on the governance of Gaza. And he who holds the aid basically holds the power within Gaza itself. It's food and guns. Okay, that's really what it comes down to. So the government in Israel is attempting, through collaboration with the United States, endorsed by President Trump, to establish a different aid channel. They've collaborated with a U.S. private organization called GHF, Gaza Humanitarian Fund, and they've created four distribution points inside Gaza. And they're distributing food in the form of boxes. This organization has distributed close to 40 million meals since its inception back in May. Okay. And in the beginning, there was a lot of hiccups. There were some issues with the way the place was laid out, how it was organized. And the way it works is the meals that they've distributed are not enough to feed every day, every single Gazan resident. Okay. And so it was never intended to totally replace the current aid mechanisms. In time, it might. And I think that's the hope of both the U.S. and Israel, is that in time it will be expanded a bit until it does. But at the moment, it's not large enough to basically replace all the other aid coming in. And in the beginning, and so how it works is these aid organizations are consisting of some American contractors, some of them armed, and with bulletproof vests on, and we're contracting local Arabs in Gaza to help in the distribution of the aid. They put the boxes out on pallets, and then they ask the Gazan residents to line up and then get them. Now, in this situation, even in times when there's total control, there's a bit of chaos. And in the beginning, there was a lot. Was a problem. So the Israeli Defense Forces provide overall security around the perimeter of the distribution points. The agency GHF distributes the food, and the Gazans line up and they pick up the boxes. Now, these distribution points are not in the middle of the humanitarian zones within Gaza. They're anywhere between 1.5 to 3 kilometers by foot away. So that means that if you're a young kid, or an older, like a 60-year-old, you're not going to be able to come pick up a box and walk back because it's a haul. So they're mostly young men who are coming to pick these things up. They bring it back. In some cases, unfortunately, they hand it over to Gaza, Hamas, because they're being forced to. Their families are threatened. And in some cases, they actually get the aid to where they are. Okay. And so that's what's set up now. There are 3 points in southern Gaza. Then around, the question is, on the approaches with the humanitarian zones to these distribution points, what happens? You need to be cognizant of the fact that Hamas is motivated to do whatever it can to destroy these distribution sites. Hmm. It has opened up fire on Gazan residents in line, waiting for the aid, okay? It has opened fire on Gazans, forcing them to rush IDF troops. There have been at least one situation, my guess is more than one, where mobs have rushed IDF troops. And the IDF troops are not trained for crowd control, but what they are trained for is when this situation happens, they first fire in the air. That doesn't stop the mob. They start firing at legs. And at least in one case, unfortunately, thousands died in the process. Most of these deaths that you read about, first of all, I don't believe half of them, but I'm sure some people are dying. Hamas is firing at its own people because it does not want this aid distribution to succeed. And it doesn't want it to succeed because it bypasses their authority and their control. And Hamas exists only because it can control everything. And we talked earlier, at least, about how if you're a reporter, you're either employed by, threatened by, or sympathize with Hamas. The same is true of the UN. If you're a UN worker sitting in Gaza and you sleep there, you eat there, your life is in danger. And unless you cooperate with Hamas, or in some cases get paid by Hamas, okay, most of these UN workers are local Gazan residents. They're not, you know, like Western visitors. There are some, but very few. So again, either you're employed by Hamas, or which many of them are, or you're sympathized with Hamas, or you're threatened by Hamas, one of the three. In any one of those scenarios, you're going to do what Hamas tells you to do, because you have no choice, because your family will be killed if you don't.
And so what's particularly outrageous is that Hamas is doing that. It's clear to everybody who knows what's going on that this is what's happening. Everyone in Israel knows because the Israel press gets it. And certainly all the Western outlets also can know this. It's not hard to know. But the fact that they spew out this information, which they know is just Hamas-produced lies, is just unbelievable. And it's obvious that Hamas is willing to sacrifice their own population in order to stay in power. And that also never comes out, that they are doing all of this, all the shooting and attacking they do of Israel and Israeli soldiers is always from within crowds of civilians and apartment buildings. And when Israel retaliates or defends the people who are distributing the aid, who are getting shot at by Hamas, who is shooting at them from a crowd of civilians, then no one reports that they're just defending themselves from Hamas. So the fact that the Western media is going along with this is that's where it becomes really crazy.
Yeah. So as we conclude this session, we want to come back and pick this up with, therefore, what is Israel going to do? Which they're thinking of different things right now. And then Denny has a question about, because of lies, there's a building anti-Semitism developing, and it's purposeful, but you're the ones that are going to suffer that. So we want to talk about that, and then what are the possibilities of what can be done about that. So we'll come back. Thank you so much. It's just shocking to us who have a heart for truth that lies can be considered true. And it's just amazing. Deception is such a big piece of life right now, is that, and I think, Eric, you said it, your family's even saying, well, there's no truth anymore. And there's nothing to trust. And anything about hearing from you guys is you are able to tell us at least, what's true. And then, by the way, before we end, Eric, why don't you, if you could just mention, what's the address of your stack?
So that if people just go to eSirkin, esirkin.substack.com, you'll be able to see my previous posts. And if you want, you can subscribe. I've seen a huge jump in the last few days about subscribers, because I guess word's getting around.
Yeah. So if you, audience, we'd say if you would go to that and keep up on it, because there's, he describes things, but he provides data, real data of what's going on. Like, for example, the aid that Israel is providing, and they're not doing what these press is saying. So thank you so much for sharing. We're join you in the, and just empathetic. Mm-hmm. We can't even appreciate what your cousin's son experience. It's just beyond us, because it's not something we typically experience, but we can imagine it. So thank you for sharing, and we want to pick this up next time.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on, guys. It is such a blessing to just be able to hear the truth of what's going on. So we appreciate you guys. and are praying for all of you in the midst of this. So listeners, if you have questions, send them in to us at questions@abideministries.com, and we look forward to seeing you next time.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Come and See, your podcast for truth in a world of chaos. Brought to you by Living Waters Abide Ministries. Send us your questions and comments and tune in tomorrow for more answers to your personal questions about living life in God's truth. Remember, God's will is best and none better. His truth brings peace in this world of chaos.